Yeah. You're checking out the Slam Magazine Respect the Game podcast. You heard it first from your boy, Jay.
What's good, world? It's your boy, Pete Walsh, a.k.a. Lamborghini Petey. Back again with another episode of the Respect the Game podcast. Here, as always, with my boy, Abe Schwadron. Abe, how are you, sir?
I'm good, man. A.K.A. Abraham Lincoln Bio. Isn't this number 44?
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of not naming the episode because I don't know when we're going to do this.
Oh, could be 45.
Could be 46. But we have a very special guest today. So we're going to just jump right into it. We got Nat Butler. You've seen his photography everywhere. Long time NBA photographer. Since baseline, pretty much every Knicks and Nets game, has been at every finals since, I think, 86. Is that correct?
87 was my first finals, yeah.
So, Nat, welcome, man. Thank you for coming.
And Slam cover photographer.
True,
as well.
Very true. How could I forget?
Oh, that's a big hit. But I feel like I need a cooler nickname. You guys have, like, the Lamborghini, Abe Lincoln. Like, I gotta come up with something.
There were no AKAs from your from your St. John's days or anything?
Those probably cannot be repeated.
No players have nicknamed you over the years?
KG could never remember my name, so he called me 84 because he knew I was around a long time. He's like, when did you start? And I started in 84, so he would just call me 84, and then there were some bleeps inevitably that came right after that.
I mean, you got to love a guy like KG can probably remember every defensive play he's ever been a part of, but can't remember somebody's name he's seen a thousand times.
Yeah, he was not a big fan of – well, he knew that I was taking stills and didn't have the audio going, so we got along great. But as soon as the guy showed up shooting rolling film with the audio, he would drop a few F-bombs and walk away.
So I guess on that note, just to start off, I'm curious, like, how many NBA guys recognize you? I mean, you're at so many games. You've been doing this for so long. How many of the guys, like, do you have that kind of, you know, recognition with?
You know what? A lot of them. And it's just from being around. And I'm always very respectful of their space. You know, like, I'm a huge basketball fan. So I love being a fly on the wall in the locker room. I'm not, like, in someone's face, bing, 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 shooting, like, mm-hmm. I'll take a shot, like, lean up against the wall, wait for a different moment, you know. And I think the guys over time are appreciative and respectful of that. You know, we're sort of, I always want to make them look good. I'm not going to do something, you know, negative or make them look in a bad light or something.
Right, right.
So I think there's sort of like a mutual respect there. And not having the audio goes a long way.
I know. It's funny you say that because we'll walk into, locker rooms pregame and it's like, it'll be like a graveyard in there. The guys don't want to say anything.
It's tough. Like, I sympathize with, and you guys can relate. They have a shoot around in the afternoon. They do media. They have a pregame.
And
media.
They do so much media.
And the average person doesn't really realize that. Yeah. And it does get to be annoying. A little bit of a grind, you know? So I will try to just visually is different than having a guy give a quote about last night's game for the 800th time. Mm-hmm. I'll just try to get a moment of something that just is appealing to me or appealing to pretty much all the fans, you know?
Yeah, plus everybody likes having a dope photo of themselves.
Oh, yeah, so, totally.
You know, you're totally doing us a good service.
Nat might have to come to our Terminal 23 game one day.
Wow, that would be legendary. I think that's a little
you know
what, pay grade,
I have
though.
To, I have to go because I just found out a friend of mine who works for Kith. Told me he's in on those games, so I gotta.
What do you need the nickname for? Right. You got cooler connections than we do.
It's really the plug.
I missed MJ's birthday party at All Star though. I don't know if you guys went.
Oh man,
our invite got lost in the mail for that one.
I was busy working, unfortunately. That I could regret that.
All right, so let's kind of take it back, you know, to the very beginning. How did you first pick up a camera? How did you get into photography? I mean, obviously now, you know, you're a legendary NBA photographer, but what were sort of the very beginnings of all of this?
You know what? I grew up a huge basketball fan. I played basketball in high school. I wanted to play in college. Quite frankly, it just wasn't good enough. I tell people I'm old. I went to St. John's back in the day when St. John's was good. sorry, Chris. But I just wasn't good enough.
Yeah.
But I was friends with the guys. I knew the guys. We would, you know, play pickup and stuff. And I was into photography and just sort of married the two passions that I had, basketball and photography, and started shooting the St. John's games back in the day. And it was, you know, St. John's was one, Georgetown two, Georgetown one, St. John's two, like crazy in the mid-80s, St. John's, the players that they had. And really, Coach Carnesecca sort of took me under his wing, mm-hmm. and, like, treated me like part of the team, you know? And that sort of blossomed from there. I worked at St. John's is obviously in New York. I worked at Sports Illustrated as an apprentice, mm-hmm. an assistant for a lot of those legendary guys. And just learned so much from them. We did, you know, not only basketball but other sports then, yeah. and you pick up their skill sets and learning from watching and all those things, and it just sort of took off from there.
Mm-hmm. So do you remember what your first NBA game was?
You know what? I don't remember the first game, but it was in like 83, 84. Mm-hmm. I was still in college and would take the F train from St. John's into the Garden and shoot the games.
Wow.
So how did it kind of, like, how did you kind of progress from there? I mean, you know, us working with photos in the magazine and stuff, your name comes up all the time. Like, you know, we look for a photo and, you know, scroll down with our eyes to the photo credit, boom, Nat Butler. Like, how did you go from sort of just another photographer to now being sort of like, I don't know, I would say like the go-to guy, essentially.
The grand puma.
Yeah, yeah. Like, how does that happen? I mean, I'm sure there's, you know, hundreds of photographers around the NBA even alone. So how did that whole progression happen from, you know, just another guy to maybe one of the more recognizable photographers in the whole league and history of the league, really?
No, that's a good question, and I appreciate that. There was some luck involved, but to be honest, I really have a passion for basketball. Mm-hmm. I love photography, and I sort of once, like, I toyed with the idea, I don't know if you can make a living doing this, was going to go to law school, and I just, once I made the decision, I just jumped, you know, 2 feet in, and I was all in, and really studied the game. I would go to a Knicks game and shoot a Knicks game. I was living in New York, go back, watch the replay of the game on MSG, looking at players' tendencies, looking at, oh, maybe if I sat here, I would get a better angle on this play, and just really studied it and worked, you know, not unlike other professions. Like, you work really, really hard. And it was a slow process starting out, no doubt.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting that, you know, you said you would go to the game, shoot, then go home, and then rewatch the game and pick up players' tendencies.
It did cost me a couple of girlfriends at the time.
Yeah.
They were like,
"You're better off without them."
This
man.
Guy is nuts.
Ball is life, man.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
So I think that kind of speaks to, like, I don't know if there's a misconception or, you know, people might think it's easy. You know, NBA photography, just show up and you snap a couple photos at the game and you call it a day. But, you know, I was watching a video I think you did with Inside Stuff a couple of years ago, and,
okay.
and you know, you were up on the catwalk setting up the lighting and everything. So why don't you just, you know, kind of take us through like a game night, you know, what time you get to the arena,
right.
what your prep is like.
No, there's a lot of there is a lot of prep involved that people don't realize for what we do, not necessarily for what a newspaper type coverage would do. But like typically if a game's at 7:30, we're there at 2 or 2:30.
Wow.
Setting things up. You're looking over the lighting. We use dedicated strobe lighting. We set cameras up in the ceiling. Everyone loves those through the backboard shots.
Let's pause there for a second. Yeah. How does that camera work? Are you clicking a button when a guy's going up for a dunk? What's the mechanics
there? It's something that has evolved over time, but something that that back, I guess, maybe early 90s, I worked with this company out of Vermont developing software and technology to make these cameras work with the strobes. And it takes a lot of pre-prep, a lot of testing. And essentially what I like to do is I'll sit at one end of the court and then put remotes up at the other. You can put them in other places, but at some point, it's like shoot video. Yeah. You know what I mean? There are certain angles that work. That glass, we call it the glass camera, is just a dynamic angle. And if you're fortunate enough to have something happen in the game, boom, you get it. There's been crazy shots, not mine, but this year, pretty much every night there's a sick Westbrook from that particular angle. And it's just awesome. It's a really dynamic angle.
Okay, so I kind of interrupted you, but you're setting that stuff up.
Yeah, you get to the 2:30, you get to the arena.
You know what? The gist of that is that we have to be done with our setup before the guys come out and warm up. So 7:30 game, guys do come out. The 8 through 12 guys come out 4:30-ish. To do their pregame routine, and we have to be off the court and done with our stuff by then. So we set up all that stuff, test all those cameras, and then sort of just mentally, I try to do things different for every game. I do a lot of games. I don't want to do the same stuff every day. Similar, but Carl Towns is coming in. Notice that he does this or does that, and try to give it some thought and tweak it for the individual games.
So how much, are you, through studying these players' tendencies, predicting what their next move is going to be, watching so much basketball, Steph Curry, his catch and release is so quick. How do you know, all right, I got to snap now compared to,
You know, it's learned and somewhat instinctual. Mm-hmm. Sometimes what the average person, even a lot of photo type people, don't realize when we talk about that, the fact that we used strobe lighting, it only allows you to take a picture once every 4 seconds. So your timing has to be good. It's not like, again, a newspaper type situation or someone shooting for a different media outlet, where with these new cameras now you get 8 or 10 frames, that gives you a lot more opportunity. So once every 4 seconds, you do have to be very, very disciplined. And I think that's where my specific background comes into play with working with those old SI guys back in the day. We used to shoot film. I started shooting film. I would shoot Hasselblad, which the film back was only 12 frames. So I would shoot literally 10 or 12 frames a quarter, just being patient, waiting for the moment. Then you see it developing. You have to then anticipate. You can't see it and then hit the button, you know. So it's a learned skill.
Are there certain, talking about, certain guys coming in and being prepared for them, are there certain guys throughout the years that were your favorites to shoot? Not necessarily your favorite player as a basketball player, but you just knew they always had amazing photos.
Yeah, and there's no coincidence that the favorite players to shoot 9 times out of 10 happen to be the best player.
Right.
It's just the way things were. Back in the day, I didn't shoot him a lot, but Magic had the ball in his hand a lot. Was he going to dish? Was he going to point? Was he going to smile? that kind of stuff. You go from him to, you know, jumping ahead to someone like Iverson was one of the all-time great guys to shoot. He was going to take it to the rim. He was going to do a nasty crossover. Like, he was the whole package. Now you have a Kyrie, or he's still insane the way he finishes. Is he going to finish with his right or his left? Like, 8 out of 10 times he does finish with his left, which throws you off a little bit because right. he yeah. technically shoots righty, but he does that one, yeah. you know. And
scoops
again,
jellies.
And
jellies.
Again, yeah. And again, on the scoop, you only get one frame. It's not like you can rip through it with 10. You get the one, and like, is the ball, is it too early, too late, whatever. And he's tough that way. But it's fun. It keeps you're into the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I just feel like, I don't know if this is a credit to you or and photographers in general, but I feel like NBA players are so photogenic, like, no matter what. Like, I look terrible in every picture I've ever
seen. We always say, like, I don't think I've ever seen a bad photo of Russell Westbrook yeah. in my whole life.
You yeah. know what? It's that's where basketball lends itself to. These guys are physical, athletic freaks.
Yeah.
Like, they look good just standing there. You know, if you yeah. look at an old picture True. Of MJ standing there, like, now we automatically go down to see what kicks he's wearing, but standing there with the MJ sweat on, just sort of stoically not moving, not doing anything crazy.
Right, just
but
hand on the hip or
but
whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. And Westbrook, like, Westbrook's intensity translates into the photos. Mm-hmm. Like, he's a beast, and it's fun to capture that. But the guys, you know, they always say football players have the helmet, they have the face. The hockey players, you can't see there. They could walk by them on the street. You don't know who they are. Yeah. The NBA guys, everyone knows who they are.
So I mean, I have a quick question just about, you know, we're talking about basically superstar players for the most part here. When you're shooting a game, do you have a responsibility to, like, let's say you're doing the Knicks game, obviously you're going to get a lot of Porzingis, a lot of Melo. Do you have any responsibility to make sure I get 2 or 3 pictures of Ron Baker in,
yes.
in the same?
No, again, that's a great question. I work for the NBA, so we do have, you know, you have to be somewhat impartial in terms of our fans. And they do need coverage of all these guys, you know. So you do need the Ron Bakers as well as the Mellos. And the thing that is cool with NBA that has transpired over the years, like when I first started working for Sports Illustrated, you know, it was very cool, very prestigious. You get a cover of Sports Illustrated was like a feather in your cap. And I think at the time SI had like 3 or 3.5 million subscribers. Mm-hmm. So now in the digital age, all of our cameras are what we call tethered. So I hit the button on the camera. In 2 seconds, that image goes to Secaucus, to the NBA mm-hmm. office, which is insane. That adds to our setup time, yeah. unfortunately. But then the NBA uses that stuff on their social media, like instantaneously they have
right.
crazy numbers of followers on yeah. their social media stuff.
And I'm curious about that. Does that change the way you shoot? Like, are you shooting specifically for, like, oh, this will look great on Instagram or this will look great on Twitter?
You know what? Not – you have it in the back of your mind, but, mm-hmm. again, the game is at such a pace where you can't be so restrictive. You know, it's not a posed shot for a cover of something where you can direct. It happens and you capture it, kind of thing. But in the back of your moment, you're looking for different – situations, different timing. There's at the Garden, there's different spots on the court where the light looks slightly different, and I look for those kind of moments.
Is there we're kind of skipping around all over the place, but it's gonna
no,
be
no, that's
like
good.
That
that's good.
Are there particular, maybe a handful or maybe one in particular, a photo that when people meet you or realize what you do, is there like a photo that is sort of the one that comes up over and over as like the one that people want to ask you about or want to talk about, or maybe 2 or 3 that are in the mix for that?
You know what? There's a number of different ones. Again, being in New York, everyone wants to always talk about the Starks dunk against the Bulls.
Yep, of course.
If you're a Knicks fan and were of a certain age, that 93 playoff game was a great time to be a Knicks fan.
Many years ago.
so people talk about that particular. There's some crazy Jordans. There was a years ago we did an NBA project. It was NBA at 50. Where we did portraits of a lot of the older players and stuff, and that was an awesome assignment for me, because I got to photograph the guys I grew up playing.
Yeah.
I mean, grew up watch playing, and like Bill Russell with his, you know, 10 fingers, 11 rings.
Yeah, that's
a yeah. We actually just posted that one for his birthday. I think.
Yeah.
2 weeks ago. Or so.
Which is a crazy. A crazy photo. Like the photo, certain photos have legs. Like I always like the game winners and moments and stuff, but certain photos sort of take on a life of their own,
right.
You know?
Right.
So, yeah, and I mean, I guess we'd be remiss not to ask you about, you know, great Jordan moments and you know, so Abe and I like kind of caught the tail end of Jordan's career.
Right.
So Abe is a Wizards fan, so he saw him in D.C. growing up. And, you know, I
strange,
certainly remember
strange times.
Him killing the Knicks in the late 90s. But, you know, I wasn't necessarily of age to truly appreciate it. So, like, if there was, like, a big, like, Bulls, you know, maybe even finals game or a nationally televised game, was there, like, a certain air about, you know, the game that
100%,
you could tell?
100%. And it was different. There was no, you know, NBA TV or something. And Michael was like a savant of the game, like, and that was one of the cool things about, again, in New York, a Sunday afternoon at that time, it was NBC. He knew that everyone was watching. Mm-hmm. Like, you could just lock in. There weren't a million games that were nationally televised. Whatever games were nationally televised, whether physically, mentally, guys had circled on their calendar. Mm-hmm. And that's funny, like talking about to guys that didn't see him play, his competitiveness was the stuff that is legendary. You know, like crazy, crazy. You hear about, you know, fights with guys in practice. Yeah. Game to 11 is at 9-9, 8-8, 9, like literally legendary competitiveness. And that was what separated him in my mind.
Yeah.
There were crazy stories. I was fortunate enough to be a part of that 92 Dream Team.
I was about to ask you about that. That was my next question.
And that was sick.
Yeah.
It was literally because, you know, Magic was on the team, and he had come back, and his HIV situation. Everyone just loves Magic. Bird was definitely at the end of his with his back injury, and MJ was like the young guy coming up, and Izzy all that, and those scrimmages between literally shirts and skins, blue, red, like were the craziest.
Yeah,
basketball.
I mean,
whatever.
You were probably privy to some stuff that wasn't even captured on anything.
You know what? There were times, and I was, you know, a little younger then. But there were times then where you would just look around. Something in one of those scrimmages would go down, and you would just look around, and did that really just happen? And you'd look, and 50 people next to you who were part of the team and the traveling all had the same exact thought. And then it's cool because oftentimes you don't appreciate the moment you look back on things and say, oh, that was great. You know, but that was one particular time where everyone involved in that 92 team understood how big that moment was. It was like traveling with the Beatles.
I was about to say, take your like professional photographer, you know, lens off for a minute. What was it just like being like at that Olympics with those guys and walking the streets?
Yeah. You know, it was fun. like there were different, you know, crazy off-court stories, you know. Charles was king of the Romblis at night, which we're not going to go into those. But just he's a good guy and was like buying people dinner and drinks every night. MJ and other guys who were into the golfing, that other stuff was legendary.
Yeah, I think there were stories that, you know, he would stay up all night playing cards and then play 36 holes. And then
you know what? The card games were legendary. I was not a participant. Those stakes were a little high. But Micah would play if there was a, you know, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, say, which is kind of a weird time, but with the time change in Barcelona, say, and I'm making it up, but 4 o'clock game, he would play 36 holes, and people would be on the bus. Oh, where's Michael? Oh, he's coming in from playing 36 holes. He puts on a sweatshirt and goes and plays the game. You know,
I'm exhausted from sitting at a desk all day.
Well, the crazy that was the time we spent weeks together.
Yeah,
and you would hear these stories about his competitiveness, and there was crazy. They were somewhat concerned about some security issues at the time. They didn't want guys going out too much, so we stayed in a hotel. We had the whole hotel to ourselves. So they brought in games. Guys had families and stuff. They had foosball, ping pong, blah, blah. These guys are all competitive.
Yep.
So they see a ping pong table. The first thing is make the brackets.
Yeah.
That's the first thing. And boom, boom, boom. For some reason, Christian Laettner was good at ping pong. So Laettner and Jordan in the finals. Like there was some side... side action going on. We'll leave it at that. Michael is like playing ping pong, sweating, like fourth quarter at the free throw line kind of sweat. For some reason, Laettner beat him. And he won't admit, Laettner beat him. He threw the pad. He was so – he didn't talk for 2 days to anyone. Practice, didn't talk. Come to find out, he had a ping pong table delivered up to his room. No one knew about it. And he was practicing for the rematch. So had a rematch 2 days later, 3 days later. And I don't know what it was, like 21-4, some kind of – he destroyed him.
Yeah.
But that was how competitive – that's what makes these guys who they are.
Well, wait. Know? I mean, to your note about, you know, being with the guys in the streets and the security – I'm looking at a picture right now that you took of John Stockton out with his family. No one cared about his security.
You know what? That was a crazy story because NBAE was filming.
Yeah, and if anyone has seen the Dream Team documentary, there's that hilarious scene that I'm sure you're about to talk about with John Stockton out in the streets.
And they had these caricature T-shirts of the 12 guys. And NBA Entertainment was filming, and Stockton was going up to these random fans on the Romulus. Oh, who's your favorite player? And John is there wearing the shirt. His face is on the shirt. No one recognizes him. He points to himself on the shirt. Oh, do you like this guy? Who's in it? And they're like, I don't know who that is. Yeah. You know, he's the 6'2 white guy with his family. He had his young kids walking up and down the streets. And he, knowing John, he loves that. He does not want the spotlight.
Yeah.
But that did open up everyone's eyes to, you know, that was the beginnings of getting the benefits of basketball being this worldwide game. Because you talk to NBA guys for years after that, they saw those games. They saw, you know, the Dream Team, and it was really basketball became a crazy worldwide popular sport.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You good on MJ? I just got it.
Yeah, I mean, we could go.
Yeah.
We could do a full MJ pod.
For the sake of time, just moving on a little bit. Like, so, you know, once, you know, Jordan retires, you know, there was, like, I guess, like, a little bit of a lull in superstar power in the NBA a little bit.
Right.
And then, you know, Vince Carter comes along and, you know, he's the opening highlight on SportsCenter every night for some incredible dunk that he's had. So, you know, what was it like, you know, and then you just have some amazing, I think you won the photo of the year for the one when he, you know, he's pretty much eye level at the rim.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And he's dunk. You got it from behind the backboard. So, you know, what was it like shooting him and seeing just, you know, pretty much nightly theatrics and explosive.
You know what? Again, he was great to shoot. And you're right. After MJ, people were always like, who's the next?
Yeah. Harold,
you know, Biner. And it's not fair. It's not fair. Like Grant Hill was going to be the next. And he had a totally different game. You know, it wasn't even a close. And, you know, the guys would come through. And Vince, I think, because of his hops and what he was doing, you know, became, you know, sort of like the highlight darling in that time period. And he was sick, you know, his dunks night in and night out, were sick. And the crazy thing now is that he's 40 years old.
It's unbelievable.
And there was a twinge in me because this fall there was a rumor that he was going to go into the dunk contest. There was a twinge of me saying it would be the greatest thing ever if he could do that and then just drop the mic and, you know.
Well, honestly, he might have won this year.
He could have used them this year, man.
This year he might have won.
But, you know, a credit to him, like, he's not a dunker.
Yeah.
You know, he's an all-around game. This stuff, he did do that crazy 360 spin a couple weeks ago, but his game is a solid all-around game. He's been in the league 19 or 20 years.
Yeah.
So, I mean, kind of on that note of, you know, always looking for like the next guy. I mean, you mentioned Westbrook too, but are there, I mean, you're a basketball fan, so are there guys sort of on the rise now that you're sort of looking at as like, you know, these are some of the maybe on the come up guys that are sort of highlight darlings for photographers at this point in the NBA?
Yeah, it's hard to pinpoint, like going back a few years. Like talking about Kyrie, like I now lived in Jersey. I saw Kyrie in high school, and I thought he was okay. Like we joke about it now. I think the star on his team was Kid Gilchrist.
Right. Yeah,
you know. And Kyrie was okay. Like obviously going to Duke, you're pretty good. But it's a testament to him. With people don't realize how hard these guys work. They're not 12 years old going to AAU and are born good, you know. And I think Kyrie is an example of that, just with my limited basketball knowledge, seeing him in high school. Okay, he's good. But then, like, people were like, even at the time he got hurt, unfortunately, was he worthy of being a number one pick?
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of that
talk. He's small, but he works, and it's crazy. Now, just of late, the last couple weeks, month, people talk about how sick his handles are.
Yep.
Well, how do you have sick handle? You work. Mm-hmm. His finals last year obviously solidified things. And you talk about he's 24. I think you talk about his, you know, working on his legacy, one championship, an Olympic gold medal already this year. We'll see, you know, what happens. But I really admire how hard the guys work.
Yeah.
You know, like we were talking off the air earlier about LeBron. Like we were all watching those high school games. This is insane. The high school game on ESPN. And there were a lot of haters wanting him to fall on his face. Okay, he has a great body. He wasn't born with the skills that he has. He works as hard as anyone I've ever seen. Like Jordan used to have what he called the breakfast club.
Right.
Before practice, before a 2-hour Olympic practice, they would meet at 8 in the morning, work out for 2 hours before practice. That's what it's the breakfast club. LeBron has taken that to a whole new level. Mm-hmm. And he has his own, you know, trainer Mike, that the stuff that you watch him do prior to a game, it's insane. Mm-hmm. But this is their world. This is their, like LeBron has come out and said, he's chasing the ghost.
Yeah.
You know, and in order to do that, they work hard.
Yeah.
You know?
And, you know, just, you know, speaking of greatness and LeBron and Michael, you know, I don't really necessarily like getting into, like, the whole comparison game.
Right.
But, you know, being at last year's finals and just seeing how all that transpired, like, I guess, one, since, considering you've been covering the finals since the 80s, was that the best you've seen? And two, can you just, like, talk a little bit about LeBron and just being up that up close to
him? You know what? LeBron, like, again, we saw him in high school. I had the privilege of following his entire career. One of the humbling things for me of late was this year's All-Star game, when I think prior to Melo being named on the team.
He was the oldest.
He's like, I'm like, wait, what just happened? You know?
I think he probably had the same thought, like, and what the hell?
No, it's crazy. LeBron at 32... I think Melo might be 6 months old, whatever. But at the time, it was like LeBron is the oldest All-Star. And I'm like, wow, where did that go, you know? But being around LeBron, first of all, he's an incredibly nice guy. Like, and he – you never hear a teammate say anything. He's like the ultimate teammate they talk about. Does he make other people better? Yeah, it's obvious. He could be the MVP – every year,
right, like for sure,
it's like with his skill set and his talent. If you take him, first of all, any team he's on is a championship contender. They've been to the finals 6 years in a
say,
row. Is
quite
insane.
Quite literally, any team he's on is in the finals.
So then, by the way, take him off of that team,
knows
and
that,
put him on another team, and that team is a
in
championship contender. Like, that's one of the craziest, knowing the grind that these guys do, one of the craziest stats recently is LeBron with Miami and Cleveland being in the finals 6 years in a row is insane, you know? And he's just he does whatever it takes to win. You know, I'll shoot more today, I'll do this. Obviously, that block on Iguodala was insane, that he has that trademark, you know. But he encourages, I think, you know, initially there might have been some friction with Kyrie. You know, Kyrie does handle the ball a lot. He shoots, is he a one, two, whatever. But he wants to win, and he will do anything it takes to win. And that's just the fan in me. That's not photography, whatever. Yeah. Like, that's the – he doesn't have too many crazy – dunks anymore, you know, he's older. Like, that's just the fan in me. Like, you're literally in awe when he goes baseline and does a skip pass to someone in the corner. He's like, Mike Miller, Korver.
Yeah,
we got you to shoot. Like, he encourages the guy, and he brings out the best in his teammates.
What was the Cavs locker room like after Game 7? Because I know you were in there taking photos. So,
you know, it was a crazy – you try again to be impartial.
Mm-hmm.
But I am more like – I know the guys better from Cleveland than I do from the Warriors, mm-hmm. just based logistically. I'm East and they're East. And it was a crazy scene. Like, that Game 7 up until 2 minutes to go was still up in the air.
For sure.
You know, he blocks that shot. Kyrie made that ridiculous shot. And I think LeBron, like, it was just crazy because I think all the stuff for Cleveland is very genuine with him. You know, he understands that his role, I think, in Cleveland and stuff is bigger than basketball. And he backs it up. Like, had they lost, bummer, back at it next year kind of thing, you know. But his love for Cleveland and the people is very
–
the parade was
– it's genuine.
Was – you'll never see anything like that love fest ever again. Like, it was – and I'm sure there was some relief there.
Yeah, totally.
But it's crazy. It was crazy.
I mean, I just meant more like – seeing Mozgov with the cheerleaders, Kevin Love with the championship belt, the champagne flowing, J.R.
You know,
Smith.
J.R. was hanging on to the trophy for quite a while.
Yeah.
You know what? It's again, like, I go back to how hard these guys work. The NBA season is a grind. There's no there's no two ways about it. It's a lot of games and the travel. Oh, they go on the private plane. Yeah, they do. But they're still getting into some hotel at 3 or 4 in the morning after a game someplace else playing again. It's a grind, and I think that's where the chemistry comes into play. Those guys, and having a guy like LeBron, you have to get along. And it's funny, the guys always talk about when they are no longer playing, the first thing they say is, oh, I miss the guys.
Yeah.
I miss – you spend more time with those guys than you do with your family. They miss the bus rides. They miss the camaraderie of being on that team. And you have to –
miss the money too, I'm sure.
you have to get along. Like the guy – there's chemistry in basketball, I think, much more so than other sports.
It's not
– you know.
You know, a lot less players than baseball or a football.
And you have
thing.
To you have to click. There was a time last year, like, is Love fit in? Is like Love going to get traded? And I think he did what he was supposed to do.
Yeah.
You know, and this year it'll be interesting to get, you know, that Bogut thing was crazy, him getting hurt.
I mean, God, just so many freak injuries, man. Can't explain it.
Because I want to see, and I'm sure they do too, I want to see teams at full strength. I want to see I want to see Cavs full strength and Warriors at full strength go at it.
You know?
So I wanted to ask you quickly, just like sort of more, I don't know, technical industry type photography questions. But as far as, you know, just like with anything, with writing about basketball, there's more people writing than ever. So I'm sure that, you know, in the photography world, there's more people wanting to be a basketball photographer than ever before. Are there sort of, you know, trends across basketball photography that you've noticed recently? How much are you looking at sort of photos that your peers are taking and thinking like, oh, this is like a new thing? Like how much is that sort of, because I know for us, we'll read ESPN, we'll read Sports Illustrated, we'll read the sneaker websites, whatever. So how much of that is going on sort of in your world, and is there sort of any trends going on right now that you're noticing?
You know what? There's always in photography, there's always the new technology. First of all, like I said, back in the day, I shot 87 finals, Celtics-Lakers. Magic hits his junior. I'm racing out of the arena in the hotel developing black and white film. Like, goes from that to shooting film to now digital. With digital, there's always these crazy advances. And social media, like I said, plays a big part of that. People want the stuff
fast.
Yeah. I want them to get good images fast. I don't want crap fast. but there's always, that has kept me enthused about things with the new technology. I have younger people working for me that are showing me things on the computer all the time. We can't do a lot of crazy Photoshop stuff because of, you know, what we're shooting is editorial, but that keeps me enthused, keeps me into it, because you're always looking for a better mousetrap. Some of these arenas have different types of lighting, so I try to maximize that, you know. And basketball, like we said earlier, does lend itself with a lot of little factors combining into the big fact. It does lend itself to good photography in general. New camera positions. Mm-hmm. What happens oftentimes, we find a new camera position, someone from Turner or Espen or someone sees that shot, and, we like that shot. They'll put a TV camera there, and we're the stepchild to TV. That they win that battle.
Okay, and then the other thing is, and I know, you know, Peter kind of asked about it in terms of how you work in terms of like all this, you know, the social media, Instagram era. But what about as far as, you know, I don't know, like as far as your photos sort of circulating, and I guess that could be both a good and a bad, you know, I'm sure there's many, many times when your photos are going uncredited all over the internet and Instagram, but also, I mean, I'm sure that has opened up, you know, doors for you as far as, you know, many more followers, many more people knowing you and appreciating your work. So how have you kind of seen that play into things?
No, it's been a big, it has been a big change. And we live in that, world now. I think NBA, you know, has been at the forefront of pushing that. They understood the value of that years ago. I think they have 24 million followers on Instagram, 20-some million followers on Twitter, like staggering numbers. And that does factor into things. But I sort of have I've sort of embraced that. People like a lot of the old school, they take a picture with a phone, this sucks. I think it's cool.
Yeah.
I think if you look on the internet, there are guys that shoot, not sports per se. There's actually a guy, Brad, I know, that shoots golf just with his iPhone. It's cool.
Yeah.
But it has opened up a whole new generation of people to photography and visual stuff in general. When I go to a game, my shots go everywhere. They go to the team. They go to the NBA. They go to, you know, you guys use a lot. And I'm appreciative, actually, of the photo credit because you are one of the few people that do that. I think just out of respect, I think that's cool. Mm. I don't think you would ever tweet something and just put it in quotes and take it without, you know, giving the
right, exactly. Right.
So yeah. It's a similar analogy. I'm old school that way. But I think it's opened up a whole new world to people creatively, visually. You could do crazy graphics, the little video snippets on the phones and stuff. It's a whole new world, and I think it's great. It has opened up, like I said, my world to a whole new audience. Mm-hmm. And that's fun. I get, you know, questions from kids in Australia.
Right.
Hey,
I'm sure, yeah.
I'm shooting my high school team. What lens should I use? Like, it's cool.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then the other thing is, you know, and we were talking a little bit before we, you know, flicked the record button on too about, you know, just that your photos are popping up not only on the main Slam Instagram account, but also Slam Kicks, because, you know, obviously now people are so into sneakers and sneaker blogs are a driving force in the internet. So, I mean, I feel like I've noticed that you take more pictures of guys' sneakers and what they're wearing now. Has that been a conscious thing, or is that sort of just built up over time?
You know what? It's actually, I've been doing that since way back, because mm-hmm. I still have my one pair of Jordan 1s.
There we go.
And I've been into it. I think now, almost getting back to what we were just talking about, people are seeing it.
Yeah.
In the past, when you're shooting film per se, it's one of one. So there could be a picture of Shaq's shoes from, you know, 96 on a piece of film in the library, but no one is seeing it. It's not digital. It's not.
We might have to get into
there.
That library.
You know, we'll talk. There's a secret password for that. But I think it's always cool, and I think the guys are cool. Like they take pride in what they're wearing. They are involved in the design of mm-hmm. the shoe, you know, and all that stuff. It's a creative outlet for them. And my initial thing, I'm not wearing a lot of them. If they want to send me stuff, they can. I'll wear them. I'll be happy to throw that in there.
You can send them via the Slam office.
But visually is the first thing that catches my eyes. Yeah. Like the whole Stance sock thing is cool. They're doing great things visually. So that's the first thing. So then I look at them, zooming in closer. Oh, that looks good. I wonder what that feels like. Like LeBron's shoes are structurally very different than
totally.
Kobe's.
Totally.
You know? But the first thing that attracts you is the visual look of it, and then I'll start looking at it more specifically about the actual, like, construction comfort of the shoe and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. I mean, I know we use those shots all the time.
Hell yeah.
Crispy photo of the sneaker is always
it makes a huge difference.
Very
man.
Much
yeah.
appreciated.
Yeah.
No, but it's cool, and I think the guys are into it.
Yeah.
You know, the NBA guys have always been very, I think,
style conscious.
Style, fashion conscious, and it's another outlet for them, you know.
Was that your series of questions?
That was my series of questions. I have Instagram questions only.
A pretty random question going back. You know, we're just talking about great players and potential MVPs and whatnot. You know, Kawhi Leonard has kind of bursted onto the scene the last couple weeks. You know, had the huge game against Houston earlier this week. But he's, like, such a stoic guy and non-expressive. Like, is he a tough guy to shoot or...
You know what? I love, like, the reaction stuff is better visually.
Yeah.
It totally is someone screaming, pointing, hooting and hollering. It's a better visual. I respect Kawhi's game. Like, it's his – you have to be true to yourself. Mm-hmm. And that's who he is. I think he's probably very fortunate that he's in San Antonio, and that comes on the heels of Duncan, who – obviously was one of the all-time greats, but you couldn't tell if they were up 20, down 20. That was his personality, whether he's on the court or not. I think Kawhi is similar that way.
Yeah.
But as a fan, you look at his game, you saw the block he had the other night. You saw he comes down, has a block, hits a three. Like, his game, he has a sick game. And I genuinely don't think... It's always going to be nice to be in the conversation. It has to be good for him to be in the conversation. But I don't think he's going to be campaigning for it. He's not going to lose any sleep over it. He wants to win. There was a comment the other day, like Westbrook, Harden, and I think, that, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but he was like, I just want to win the game. And I think they have. It's going to be a little interesting out West, that's for sure. Because, to be honest, I was never a huge Harden fan. Thought he was like perhaps a little selfish, whatever. But this year he has changed his game, and you got to give him props for doing that. I think D'Antoni is definitely like an offensive genius.
Yeah, for sure.
And they have certain pieces, and Harden, like you have to give him props for what he's doing. Okay, he's going to pump fake. He's going to go to the line. They have 8 million scouting reports. He still does these things. Yeah, like,
you know, he's going left.
Yeah, like he still does it, you know. So the fan in me, I think that's awesome.
Yeah. I got just one more
quick question. Do it. Fire.
So do you do the rookie shoot every year as well?
Yes.
So, I mean, I think... For me, speaking personally, like draft time, the finals into the draft is probably my favorite time of year. Just like, obviously the finals are amazing, but also just getting to know all the new kids coming in and, you know, just seeing how happy they are to you know, live their dream and achieve their dream. So, you know, at the rookie shoot, does that like give you like a maybe make you feel like re-energized? Like, oh, like I got all these new kids to shoot
100% now. Because that's usually like I do meet them at the draft or day before, but it's very stressful. Like and these kids are 20 years old, and it's like they don't know what city they're going to. They have family pressure, whatever. Like at the rookie shoot is the first time you really get to meet them with their guards down. They're in uniform. We're usually doing something basketball related, so that's their world, and you realize every year they keep getting younger and younger, which is insane. But that was the first time, like, I had seen, again, in Jersey, I had seen Karl Towns play in high school, and I was like, wow, this guy's a beast. But he went to Kentucky, I followed him, but didn't really interact with him. He comes a rookie, like, the nicest guy ever.
Man. Super nice
kid. Oh, by the way, that happens to be, like, he's going to be a all-star for 15 years.
Yeah.
You know, so that is cool to me. And then we recently did that reenactment of that 96 slam cover, which was fun because
fun.
That
moving those guys around, you like know what? Trying cool. to get them to stand still.
But again, like these guys are the slam generate. When I was a kid, I would run to the mailbox to get Sports Illustrated. Mm-hmm. Me working at Sports Illustrated was like a dream. They have sort of veered this way. These guys grew up reading Slam.
As
and
did
listening
we.
To Same. Listening yeah. to Slam podcast, perhaps.
We can only hope.
But that's the generation. No, but that's the generation. And your guys' relationship with LeBron from day one, that has value.
Yeah.
Like, Allen Iverson's relationship with Slam and the stuff that you guys were doing, like letting him be, you're not pigeonholing him into what people wanted mm-hmm. him to be. Mm-hmm. He's AI. This is who he is. And he's still true to that. But that was where Slam, I think the whole generation of these young kids, and that's cool.
Yeah.
Totally. You know?
All right, so if people have listened to us for going on an hour now, where's the best place, you know, if they want to see more of your photos and stuff or follow you on social media, like plug everything, you know, we can find you.
We can plug my personal account is at Natalie Photo.
Which you can also find. You know, we use his ad a lot at Slam.
No, and like I said,
credit him, so
I appreciate,
you can find it there as well.
I appreciate that because you guys also use – a lot of the non-traditional photos that I think are cool. Like I shoot something, I want people to see it. You guys use it. Slam, NBA obviously uses things pretty much on a daily, nightly basis. The different teams do. But go renew your Slam subscription.
Please.
Friend of the company.
Nat, thank you so much for taking the time, man. That was a lot of fun.
Thank you, guys.
On for another hour if we really wanted to, but...
It's been great. Thank you. Yeah.
We want the...
I'm a fan.
We want the, like, when you're... Eventually, when you're done with all of this and you can talk about things in a fully unedited manner, we wanted to have you back for that podcast.
We'll do that. I am starting... People ask me, when are you doing the book?
Right.
I'm starting to gather that stuff. And that's... like an ongoing, who knows when it's actually happened, but it's been fun for me to go back and look at. It gives me an excuse to go back. I'm always busy, like doing five games a week, but going back and looking at some of the old stuff, and just as soon as you see the photo, then you have the memory of what happened, and so that'll be an ongoing thing, and we will we'll come back for that.
Great. All right, Nat, thanks so much, man. All right. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. All right. Thanks for having me. Thank you.